This is Dirt and Sprague.
Ours is a new love, but it burns very brightly, and it gets hot and sweaty and stanky. There's some stank on that love.
With Andy Dirt Johnson.
You think you're going to find somebody that's going to be like psyched to go to Applebee's with you every Friday night and hear the same football stories about how you rocked in high school?
I did rock in high school football. You want to check tape?
And Brendan Sprague.
You know about the cup sizes now?
Yeah, different cups.
Yeah, I know about the cup.
You got the A, the B. The C, the D, that's the biggest.
I know the D is the biggest. I based my whole life on knowing that the D is the biggest.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour two. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2 and YouTube. YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan.
How do we feel about our tournament commercial so far? Bingo! We like that one. Bateman, Batman. We got that one 8,000 times.
I like the Bateman, Batman, but they are playing it too much.
I mean, it's this year's what a pro wants, what a pro needs.
There's a lot of people in Southern California would suggest that insurance company's been more Bateman than Batman.
A little more Bateman too, over the years. We got the little piggy crying wee, wee, wee all the way. Geico just turned
that's
the clock back.
Brought back into our lives.
Just throwing it back about 15 years ago.
What's that pig's name? I love when the mom is like,
Maxwell.
Maxwell. Yeah. Yo, thanks, Mrs. A.
We're home, Maxwell.
Whee!
Why did they decide to go back to that?
I don't know. Of all the ones to bring back, too, that was the one that they called. They got some great, you know, throwbacks in the old chamber, but they went with the little piggy. Wee, wee, wee.
Are these companies paying just a crazy amount of money to be the same four commercials every break?
I don't get it.
The What a Pro Wants, What a Pro Needs commercial was played during the NBA playoffs?
I think that was an AT&T one, if I'm not mistaken. I know the Cooper Flag Bingo one is AT&T.
I think it's Teen.
Is it Teen? Are you sure? I think it's
AT&T. No, those are AT&T.
I think it's an AT&T, yeah. Bingo! Nice job, Coop.
Can we just bring Lily back?
you want Lily back? Bring her back for the tournament?
She hasn't been seen in a long time.
No, Lily disappeared. Is she still alive? People don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I just... When you play the same commercial every time.
Yeah, it's good. No matter how funny it is. The first time I saw the Bateman Batman one, I was like, it's kind of a funny play on a commercial.
Although, to be fair, now that I'm watching Blazer games on an antenna, I am getting a lot of outrageous audio.
buddy, bring it.
Tweeters are $1.
Now we're talking.
We have a lot to get to in the second hour. David Cobb's going to join us, get his thoughts on the Sweet 16 matchups, his takeaway. One of our listeners says there's no commitment to stay, basically, and work together. And I said, there's a commitment to get a bag.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know if that listener is really just blaming players more so than it's just there's no commitment anymore because the money is too good.
Same as it's always been for the coaches.
Yeah. But for some reason, players get the brunt of it. I'm not saying that listener.
They get the brunt of it. It's NIL. It's transfer portals out of control. We didn't care that a head coach was actively coaching a team in the tournament while already being hired by another team.
Yeah, like probably coaching the players on that team.
Drake was one of the others. Say, look at that. Drake's a nice little team. Guess where Drake coach is going? Not back to Drake. Sean Miller left Xavier again.
I know.
Again, that guy was the most toxic name in college basketball. They gave him a soft landing after getting turfed by Arizona and NCAA sanctions. And then he left them again.
I mean, Texas.
I get it, but this is the thing that just makes me chuckle every year. It's the players are out of control. The transfer portal's out of control. Oh, my God, this is madness and chaos. But coaches can just freely, willy-nilly, every time you want to leave. You sign a contract. Doesn't matter. I'm leaving. I'm going to a bigger job.
You know who can't win at Texas?
Rodney. Hey, why don't you stop those horns downs, all right? They're a little offensive to me. Sean Miller's going to work out great for you.
Well, hey.
He beat him in the first in or the first four or whatever
it was. They got resources. All right?
They do.
Your team fell to the Arizona Wildcats in a Pac-12 rematch.
They did.
Caleb Love went absolutely nuts in this game. Arizona shot 50% from three.
That's pretty good last time I checked.
And despite the fact that Oregon shot 54% from the free throw line.
From the free throw line, not from the floor. Free throw line.
They had a chance to tie this game late.
Yeah.
And they were right down to the wire with Arizona before ultimately falling in the second round and not reaching the Sweet 16.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Also kind of a weird show because we have two games. So it's
and
like
now we can't talk about the 40-point win. That was great.
Yeah.
Liberty Bibberty in
Dana
the corner watching.
His streak of not losing his first game and blowing out Richie McKay in his hair the way that nature has. And beating Liberty by a million. Who won by more, Oregon against Liberty men's basketball or Dan Lanning and Oregon football against Liberty in the Fiesta Bowl?
It actually ended up being pretty comparable.
It's got to be pretty close in that
wheelhouse. I think the football score was 44-7 or 45-7, I think, or 45-6, somewhere in that range.
And what was the final in the Oregon basketball game? Because I turned it off.
I did, too. The final in the basketball game was 81-52.
81-52, so 39?
29.
29.
29.
Yeah, 29.
29. Final answer, 29.
So, you know, pretty close.
Pretty close. Relatively close.
So, Altman, hey, he won.
He won.
He won.
Yes, but let's not talk about that.
But his most recent game,
fire,
he lost.
Fire that ass. Now, fire. Get him out of here. Get him out. Guy's a bum. Get him out. Can't win anything. Now, look, that one hurt. It hurt because of the start. First, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes of the game, you're like, holy crap, this is... Oregon has had a really hard time this year getting out of the gate strong. It feels like one of their biggest issues, especially when they went through that midseason swoon, it was overcoming disastrous starts, finding their way back into a game. And they say, all right, now they've finally found the rhythm. Maybe they'll find a way here. Outside of maybe the Michigan State game on the road, in which they were at a big lead at halftime and then blew it in the second half. That was one of their bugaboos. Came out of the gate incredibly strong. They were hitting every shot. Shellstad was playing on another level. And you're just thinking, oh my God, are they going to run Arizona out of the gym at this point? The tide slowly started to turn because Oregon continued to turn the ball over, and they would go on long stretches of not scoring. The fact that they trailed at the end of the first half after that, what was it, 20-4, whatever the start of the game was, that was red flag number one. You wasted an opportunity to have a nice halftime lead here, and you allowed Arizona a chance to get back into the game. Mm. The other two things that killed them, I mean, it doesn't take a brilliant mind to point this out. Bill Shonley's rolling over in his grave. They went 12 of 22 from the free throw line. 12 of 22.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just, you know, hey, a bad free throw shooter. Kwame Evans was 2 of 5. He hadn't been a great free throw shooter this year. Shellstad missed a couple of big free throws. Biddle missed free throws. He was 1 of 3 from the line.
Kept getting splits. Just couple,
every time, you're like,
splits.
Dude, just you lost the game by 4, and you missed 10 free throws. So there you go. That's problem number one. And then, you know, look, I find the reaction to college basketball funny, where I did see some of the Dane Altman stuff, which is always going to rear its ugly head.
How do you find it?
It's just I mean, we had a listener tweet us last night. This is why we should fire Dane Altman. Oh. So that's one of the places.
Okay.
I think that's like the knuckle dragging element of the fan base that I just could not disagree more with.
All right.
But this was my point about coaches in college basketball. And I mean this in no way to belittle the guy, no pun intended. Nate Biddle's carried them this year. He
yes.
has been their most consistent player.
Yes, he has.
Shellstad has had good games and bad mm-hmm. games. Other guys have come and gone or mm-hmm. been in and out of it. Nate Biddle is the main reason Oregon was 25-10 this year. He has been unquestionably their best player this year. He was awful last night.
In the first half, for sure.
Sure, he got it going
in
the second half
second
when
late.
The starting center for Arizona got 4 fouls
yeah.
and he got to play against the backup.
Hey, yes.
Look, he took advantage of that matchup, yes. But there was a time in the second half where he had more turnovers than field goals. It felt like every time they went to him in the post, he was undecisive of what he wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
took too long to make a move, would bring the ball down, give an Arizona guard time to come poke it away, and he just kept turning it over. And that's he was amazing. I hope he comes back for another year. He's a hell of a player, and Oregon's not to where
Why
they're at.
Why would he not come back?
I don't know. I'm assuming he doesn't have much of an NBA draft future, but I don't follow mocks and all that kind of stuff.
I haven't seen his name
okay.
on...
He's a 7-footer that can shoot a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how this works out. I hope he comes back next year, but he had a rough night last night. Your best player did not had in the second half of the game had more turnovers and field goals at one point. You combine that with missing 10 free throws, that's how you lose a game by 4 points to a talented team that you mentioned shot 50% from three, and their best player in Caleb Love was outstanding from start to finish in that game.
Yeah, I think it's just the way you lose.
Hurts.
And when you miss free throws, like when you largely point to that and say that's what did it, that's where people get really frustrated. I can't blame the coach for that. The coach is
not shooting free throws.
They're in college. They know how to shoot free throws. The coach isn't going, hey guys, let's practice our free throws for 35 minutes. You know, it's
maybe
like
maybe not have 9 turnovers. Maybe let's not do that.
Well, that's another big part. Also, Arizona's really stinking good. They've got really talented players all over the court. And so you combine all these things and there's a lot of reaction from these kinds of performances. I thought Biddle was really good in the second half, as you mentioned, when their big got into foul trouble.
Was it Awaka? Is that their starting
Awaka,
center?
Yeah. He was out for like 7 minutes.
He was eating Biddle. That guy was a hell of a defender, man.
He was
all over the place.
I would like to talk about, and maybe we do this on the other side, of just, was that drawn up for TJ Bamba? Or did TJ Bamba go rogue and say, nah, this is me time.
Yeah.
This is winning time. TJ Bamba time.
This is Bamba time.
Because there were two players on the court that I'm like, they're both having a moment.
Yeah.
They're both playing really good these last 5 minutes.
I prefer Jackson Shellstad to shoot a ball with the game on the line.
And neither one of them were named TJ Bamba.
Bamba had a good game.
He wasn't bad.
He was good, but...
But I think if I told you they're down two somehow despite all of this...
Yeah, I would prefer Jackson Shellstad gets the look there. Or Biddle, against the backup big.
Made like free throw extended type jump hook shots multiple times.
Yeah.
So we could talk about that on the other side, what the future may hold for that program. And then we got David Cobb at the bottom of the hour. So good to back with more on that on The Fan. Well, Andrew, your duck season is over. It's on to the baseball or spring football, whatever you desire.
I mean, to be honest with you, it's spring football and then baseball. We'll get to baseball eventually. We took 2 out of 3 from Rutgers this weekend. Back in the top 10, baby.
Harper Bailey. The Bailey brothers.
Yeah, the Bailey brothers.
I saw this from Ryan. Another moral victory in a great season. What's the end game for this Ducks basketball team? This program needs to start getting to the next level.
Yeah. Go win a national championship, man.
Was thinking about had Michigan State lost to New Mexico and Patino Jr. Like, what would we be? We don't ever bring up the fact that Izzo has won, right?
He's got one, and it was a long time ago, man. He beat an Ernie Kent Duck team to get there.
I was in middle school when he won that.
Long time ago.
I'm almost 40.
I think I was 11 years old when that happened.
What year was that, Swag?
2001?
The Mateen Cleaves. No, it wasn't 01, because that was 01? Arizona Duke.
I think it was 2000.
I think it was 2000.
Yeah.
It's 2025. My God.
Yeah.
I was in middle school. So it's like, even if he just wins one, that's like as many as Izzo has won.
How many did Jim Boeheim win?
One.
How many does Mark Few have?
None.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Program wins 20 games every year. They're in the tournament more often than they're not. They win a game every time they're in the tournament. You make your free throws, you're in the Sweet 16.
I think it's the idea of like missing out on Florida got golden from San Francisco.
They did.
And that was a great hire.
Will he win a national championship at Florida?
I don't know.
We'll find out.
Do you think they look like the best team, or is that Duke for you? Because I think it's Florida. They were more tested. They played a better team in UConn.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
They took down the champion, which is never an easy thing to do.
I mean, not that Baylor's a juggernaut, but to see Duke would do what they did to Baylor was pretty impressive.
Duke looks pretty good.
I mean, they just...
They do. I'm not denying it.
I mean, they got a top 10 pick on their roster. Baylor does. Not that that's the end-all, be-all in the tournament. You know, elite players can often lose games early, but what they've done is wildly impressive.
Edgecombe and Flag have a little bit of a rivalry that dates back to high school.
They do. I saw some videos of them, chirping a little bit back in the old high school days.
It's one of the reasons I love both players. I mean, Edgecombe's great, but that's why I love Flag. He's just hyper-competitive psycho.
I'd love to have a chance to draft them in the NBA.
Well, you will, because we're not making the play-in. Will our odds be good? No.
No.
But we'll have odds.
We'll have odds, I think.
Statistically, we're in it.
We'll have odds.
We may get to the Blazers at some point. They beat Denver on Friday, and then they lost to Boston yesterday. Yeah. So it's much like the tournament. We're reacting to the most recent.
Not the Friday night game.
Even though there was a Friday night win against the Nuggets, who did have Jamal Murray in that one.
They did. No Jokic, but Jamal Murray.
Okay, so maybe this was said in the post game. None of us listened to the post game because that game went too late because of all the damn reviews.
It's like 9:30 when the thing ended. I went to bed.
If we have Altman confirming this, then I will gladly get off. But it felt like TJ Bamba went rogue on that play to tie it at 80. What did you guys think? Do you think that was drawn up for TJ Bamba?
I don't think that it was drawn up for TJ Bamba. I think that was he got the inbounds ball, probably looked immediately and didn't think anybody was open, and then went hero mode. And you can get that from a lot of guys in basketball where it's just, I want my moment. I'm going to take a dumb shot. And to his credit, he had a relatively good game. Him taking kind of a running floater or whatever it ended up being.
Running hook almost
at the top of the key.
If you decide you're going to go.
Almost missed everything.
Yeah. you have to get all the way to the rim.
Yes, you got to make it to the foul line, even though they couldn't make free throws.
And he's going against maybe their best perimeter defender as well.
I mean, like, Shellstat's got to have the ball.
Or have the call if you want him to attack, because he had a good job. He did a good job penetrating for most of the game. Have him attack and kick. Find Shellstat or find Biddle or find, like, if that's the way you want to drop the initial play, I'm okay with it. But I don't think the idea out of that timeout was let's have TJ Bamba take this shot when Shellstat had basically not missed, it felt like, for the majority of the first two games of the tournament.
No, the last point guard from West Lynn for Oregon got the ball in those moments and hit big shots. And I'm not saying Shellstad would have made the shot,
But I trust him far more shooting a 3-5 feet behind
the
line.
You're a lot more accepting of your fate if it's the balls in Shelstad's hands for the final play.
I actually thought it kind of summed them up in a weird way because I didn't think they were that good this year, but like obviously they weren't bad. They were okay in the Big Ten. I think I agree with you. Biddle carried them most of the season. He had a rough first half and rough against Awaka, but for the most part, when he was out, Biddle took advantage of that. I just was like, okay, this is the prototypical Dana Altman team. I don't think this team is really that great, but here they are, maybe taking down Arizona.
Player two away from going to the Sweet 16.
And a player
Same
two,
thing as last year when you lose to Creighton in the second round, a game that goes to whatever, double overtime, you're a player two away from winning that game and going to the Sweet 16.
No, I think it was more back in the first half. They got the big lead 19-4 in the first 5 minutes, and then...
Can't let him off the hook.
Caleb Love also had, like, one of his better games of the year. I mean, you got to credit sometimes to the other guys who perform really well. I think the interesting thing for them, despite losing in a heartbreaking way, I mean, seemingly should be back, a lot of those guys, right?
Majority of guys will be back next year.
I keep hearing that if Biddle comes back, and I'm like, is he going to the NBA to be a late first-round, early second-round pick?
I mean, if he's got a first-round grade, I would tell him to go.
You'd tell Biddle to go?
I would,
you're still getting a guaranteed
guaranteed deal.
Is
you could
Biddle
get hurt.
Really getting huge NIL money?
He's a four-year guy. Like, he's been at Oregon for 4 years. I know he's one of the years he didn't play a ton, and that's why he might get the extra, or he got the extra year of eligibility.
Trying to see where he's at on a mock.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I haven't looked that deep. Most of the mocks I've looked are just lottery picks. I don't really pay attention to the guys after that.
I think it would depend on what people are saying on the mock stuff is it just depends on how his workouts go.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, he's a legitimate 7-footer. He can shoot the ball. Like, he can handle it.
A good passer.
Good passer. He seems to be a smart hoop, like basketball, high IQ guy.
Yeah, not overly athletic, though.
A lot of matchups that would scare you. Defensively.
He's a pick and pop guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, he's playing like 8 to 10 minutes a night, and he's shooting a couple threes.
I think for him,
would you take a flyer on that in the second round?
A lot of fit, team that knew. But if he's a rookie that could go into a veteran team, and, the backup center.
Yeah.
And
he's currently projected to go undrafted.
Undrafted.
Yeah. So, okay, let's say he comes back.
If he comes back, then your two best players are back. Not to mention, I mean, the ironic thing about this roster is their two highest recruits in the last 2 years, the big guys that everybody got excited about, were Supreme Cook and Mookie Cook.
Didn't do a whole lot.
Neither of them played. I mean, I know they played 5 minutes last night. I think was it Mookie who had the block at one point?
Yeah.
Walk away going, oh my God, those two guys are the future.
That's the funny part about high school recruiting now that you get excited about. You're like, those were big time fives. Like, oh my God, they got big time recruits. And those guys had no impact at all. I would imagine Kwame Evans is going to be back. He was only a sophomore this year. Mm-hmm. If he's not bolting for the NBA
and
yet.
Shelstad feels like he's prime for a
4-year run.
Pritchard final year, I'm on an FU tour type vibe.
Next year's the year I think you look for him to, not that he wasn't good this year, and especially, God, in the tournament, man, he was so good against Liberty and so good last night.
He was good. He had that weird little 2-3 week stretch where you're just like
in the middle
doing?
Of the season where he just had like 3 games where he didn't even make a shot and would only take 3 or 4 shots and you just got to be more. Next year is the year that he takes the big jump. I think next year is the year he turns into a all conference kind of recognizable name.
Sure,
he's got a world of talent, man. So Oregon's not going anywhere, and you know they're going to add a couple of guys in the portal because they do every single year. So chunks of your roster could be back. Your two best players from this team could be back. Your two biggest recruits from the last 2 years. You're hoping maybe eventually turn into something and pop. Like, the program's going to be good again next year. I think the Big Ten put their money where their mouth was so far with the performance in the tournament. I think every Big Ten team won their first round game, if I'm not mistaken.
The Big Ten started 10-0 before they suffered a loss.
So, like, dude, you win 20 games in a conference that put 8 or 10 teams into the second round, whatever it was. Like, hell of a year. Came up just short again. It's a bummer. It sucks. But they're going to be back and even better next year.
Well, dare I say, too, I think... going back to other Duck teams 1 year robbed of the COVID season, if you get those guys that we just named back,
they'll go into the year as probably a top 12 team in the preseason.
Plus,
pool.
You add some portal stuff, which they seemingly always do.
One or two guys every year.
I don't know how you don't get excited. I mean, you've long brought this up throughout the year, and they had some games where attendance was good, but they had a lot of games. You're like, hey, is anybody at that game?
Yeah, there were significantly more Arizona fans there last night, and that was a game in Seattle.
I told the
wife distance.
She was like, man, it's loud. I go, that game's in Seattle, and there's more Arizona fans. She goes, really? And I go,
they travel well.
Arizona
to give them
travels
credit.
Really, really well.
But the fact that they were... It sounded like a home game.
U of A.
Sounded like a home game.
I just... in the era of complaining about not having continuity and who knows who's on the team right now, Oregon might be in a position, you know, unlike most, where they're like, hey, we got like four key guys back.
I know that name. I've seen him play before.
They got the second round last year, yeah, and they got all these guys back. It'd be a reason to be super excited in a way maybe you haven't felt that many times in the last decade or so.
It would be a very good feeling going into the year.
We'll see if it happens, but you just don't see these teams get that amount of talent back.
No.
But they're weirdly built, like where Biddle's not really on the radar. Shellstad just screams four-year college point guard who goes on and tries to find his way through the NBA. You mentioned Evans. We'll see what the Cook, Mookie Supreme, we'll see what happens there and then what they do in the portal. But you got guys that all could be back and you go, I'm familiar with this. I recognize this. Let's build on what last year
was. Well, it's not just returning names, too. I mean, they're unquestionably this year, their two best players were Shellstad and Biddle. And if you can return your two best players from a team that was a couple of plays away from going to the Sweet 16.
Yeah, leaves you very optimistic.
Hell of a place to start off next year.
The Blazers had a couple games over the weekend. Aaron Rodgers visited Pittsburgh. Yeah, swag. I can tell you're excited about that, huh? Aaron Rodgers in Pittsburgh?
Catch the fever.
Is there a more depressed fan base at quarterback than Pittsburgh? I'd rather be a Giants fan at quarterback.
Browns fan.
Jameis Winston?
I'd rather have Jameis knowing I'm going to draft a Shadour than be whatever it is.
I think the Browns Steelers fans are still more depressed.
Yeah, maybe. But if they get Cam Ward, are they depressed? Pittsburgh's plan?
No. If
it's Rodgers or Wilson,
that's it.
And nobody wants Wilson.
No,
like the NFL is telling you he sucks.
No, you're going to wait for every other quarterback to sign before Russell Wilson gets a deal somewhere as a backup.
Not good.
Not good, Bob.
Not good, Bob. But we'll talk with David Cobb, CBS Sports college basketball writer. What's he make of all the matchups in the Sweet 16 and his view of maybe a lackluster start to the NCAA tournament? We'll talk with David Cobb at the Daily Ticker next on The Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is poured by Pelican Brewing. Take a break with Pelican's Beak Breaker, the Northwest's favorite double IPA, Pelican Brewing Company. Cheers, fellow fanatics.
Today's Daily Ticker fueled by Pelican Brewing's Beak Breaker IPA. Big hops, big flavor, a crisp finish. Beak Breaker is the perfect way to stay refreshed through every bracket-busting upset, of which we have not had very many. And joining us now to talk about that is our good friend David Cobb of CBS Sports. Covers college basketball and college football for CBS Sports. You can give him a follow on Twitter at David W. Cobb. David, good morning to you. We were having a conversation earlier in the show, and I saw you tweet about this weekend. The idea of the death of the Cinderella. Where are our Cinderellas? Why don't we have more upsets? Your thoughts on the opening 4 days of the tournament, the lack of Cinderellas, and what does that mean overall for the long-term health of the Cinderella?
Boy, but you guys are trying to get me going early on a Monday. I appreciate it. I actually need a little kick in the butt today because these last 4 days, man, it's a whirlwind in the content business. But yeah. I don't think Cinderella is dead. I think she's just taking a nap. Because look, it was 2 years ago we had San Diego State and Florida Atlantic in the Final Four. It was within the NIL era that we had number 15 seeds like Oral Roberts and St. Peter's and Princeton in the Sweet 16. That was during the NIL era. So I mean, what we're seeing is more so conference consolidation. That's what that's what you get when you bunch all the teams, all the biggest brands together in a handful of conferences. As y'all know good and well, there is no Pac-12 anymore. Everybody wants to say, wow, this is the first Sweet 16 with no mid-majors. And yes, that is factually correct. But look, I mean, 2 years ago, BYU was in the WCC. 2 years ago, Houston was in the American, right? So we're having a different conversation without conference consolidation. I think that's more what this is about. I mean, I don't blame anyone for being worried about Cinderella. I like it when Cinderella shows up to the NCAA tournament, too. I just think this is one of those years where, you know, the ball didn't bounce her way.
David, it feels like when we talk college basketball, at least right now for this year in this tournament, it feels a little NBA-ish to me. Like, I just want to talk about the sport and the games, and people want to respond with, yeah, but the TV viewership, and oh, this is what's wrong with the sport. I hate to be that guy with it, but the other thing that killed me this weekend, I mean, we need 85 reviews per game, and they need to take 5 minutes per review. Is there any hope that this changes? I know there's some rumors out there of maybe they do the coaches challenge stuff, but I've seen some reports that kind of dispute that coaches wouldn't like that. So, like, what do we do to eliminate it? Because it got a little ridiculous this weekend.
It absolutely did. And case in point was the last couple of minutes of Arizona-Oregon. It was just brutal. It was hard to watch. It took forever, and it was just unnecessary. I'm 100% in agreement with you on that. It's not good for college basketball when we spend more time at the monitor. And these games take 2.5 hours now, right? Like last night, it's not like there's another game coming on afterwards that gets cut into, but all the time during the regular season, it's like, well, we're actually going to get to the start of Oregon and USC on ESPN News because, we're doing 100 reviews on the game that came before it, and it lasts two hours and 45 minutes. I mean, I would have to imagine, I haven't seen the data on this, but I would have to imagine that the average game length in high major Division I college basketball on these games that are on the major networks is longer than ever before because of the reviews. We got to do something to fix that. I think it should be a pitch clock. Like we have in Major League Baseball now, the pitcher has a certain amount of time before they have to throw the next pitch, right? I think there should be a 1 minute clock on the review on the scores table when the officials go over there to look at the monitor. They should have 1 minute to decide what they're going to do, and after that 1 minute expires, they just have to go with the best resolution they can conjure up in that 1 minute. I mean, let's just get back to playing basketball.
I agree 100% with that take. There has to be a limit on it. If you can't find enough evidence in a minute to overturn something, then what the hell are we looking for anyways? David Cobb is our guest, college basketball writer for CBS Sports. Go give him a follow on Twitter at David W. Cobb. Well, we talked about the death or not death of the Cinderella, so I'll ask you kind of a follow-up to that a little bit. What has been the biggest surprise of the first 4 days of the tournament for you?
Well, it's the first-year coaches. If you want a big-picture takeaway from the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, it's this idea that you can flip a team in year one, flip an entire program in year one. And we've kind of known that in the portal era, you can flip something quicker than you could before when you had to coach the prior staff's players. And now you don't have a choice because when there's a coaching change, everybody who was on the team is going to leave. So you really don't have a choice. You have to rebuild from scratch when you take a new head coaching job in Division I these days. And we see Arkansas, Kentucky, BYU, Michigan all here in the Sweet 16 with first-year coaches. It's pretty amazing, the fact that you can flip it in year one like that. And honestly, guys, it puts a lot of pressure on guys who are getting new jobs right now because all their fans are looking around the country and seeing, well, so-and-so made the Sweet 16 in their first year. There is no more of this grace period and, oh, we got to build. And no, if you have NIL, and that's a big if for some of these programs, but if you do, you can build a 2026 Sweet 16 roster today. The transfer portal opened today, and that's where your championship rosters for next season are being built.
David, who would you tell our listeners you thought was going to win this before the tournament started, and who do you think now is the best team given the couple games we've been able to watch?
I went with Florida as my champion pick prior to the bracket or prior to the beginning of play. Boy, Duke looks really good though, doesn't it? I'll tell you what, I am intrigued by. I mean, we all saw Caleb Love last night, and when he's on, he's spectacular. And the ironic thing is that 3 years ago, he was at North Carolina and ended Coach K's career in the Final Four when North Carolina beat Duke. Now, 3 years later, he's got a chance to end the Cooper Flag run. So I think it's a great storyline. But, boy, I'd be surprised if Caleb Love can dig deep enough to get past Cooper Flag and Duke because they are playing at an unreal level right now. So, I mean, I'm not completely off of Florida, but it's hard to deny the fact that Duke is playing really amazing basketball.
Let's ask you a question, David. You covered the sport. I'm sure you filled out some brackets or one bracket. Everybody loves doing that this time of year. We started the show today talking about the idea of what does it mean that your bracket is busted? So if you tell somebody that your bracket is busted, what does your bracket look like?
I feel like at this point your bracket is, quote, busted if you've had – two of your final four eliminated, or had your, certainly if you had your national champion eliminated. Yeah. But the thing is, there are no perfect brackets left. That's the amazing thing about this. there's so many millions of combinations that it's almost impossible to have the Sweet 16 correct. And it's crazy too, is this is a relatively predictable Sweet 16 in the sense that there's not a 15 seed in here. There aren't really, I mean, I think Arkansas is the only double digit seed still left standing. So in theory, this one should have been easier to predict, but last I've heard there are no perfect brackets left.
The Elite Eight matchup that David Cobb needs the most to inject into his veins is who?
Well, you got to realize you're talking to a Southerner here. So Tennessee, Kentucky would really do it for me. That would be incredible. So Kentucky's already beaten Tennessee twice this season. There's a bit of a border war there, two schools separated by less than 3 hours. And the ironic thing is that Tennessee, for its first weekend, was playing in Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. That's just a strange thing to have that building taken over by Orange. And so I'm sure Kentucky fans weren't happy about that. I'm sure they'd love to put Tennessee in its place this coming weekend.
Great stuff. David Cobb covering college hoops for CBS Sports. Go find all his great work, cbssports.com, and you can give him a follow on Twitter, @DavidWCobb, one of our favorites. Thanks so much for the time, man, breaking down the opening week of the tournament, and hopefully we can do this again soon.
For sure. Thank you, guys.
There you go. David Cobb of CBS Sports, Daily Ticker, as always, brought to you by or fueled by Pelican Brewing's Beak Breaker IPA with big hops, big flavor, a crisp finish. Beak Breaker is the perfect way to stay refreshed through every bracket-busting upset. Good stuff. Talking tournament.
Good stuff from him. I totally understand people that come in today and say, Duke? I would have held to my guns a little bit if I was him. He picked Florida to win it. I know it was a closer contest in the second game for them versus what Duke did, but I anytime you can take down Hurley and then make him look like a little bee, I think you got something to be proud of. I think Florida's in that running with me just as much as Duke is who looks the best so far in the tournament.
And he says, no death of the Cinderella. It's just taking a nap. Just taking a little cat nap. Now, his point is valid. We've had in the last handful of years, Oral Roberts make it as a 15 seed.
Remember, conference realignment one was the one for me.
It's a great point.
But also, these teams and these programs, Dirt, they've had a couple years since Dusty May made the Final Four at Florida Atlantic to figure this out to the point where I just wonder, was that the last hurrah for us with those kind of teams doing it now that they get their NIL collectives together?
Well, the closest. What was the closest Cinderella in the first round? Was it Brian? I mean, Brian, I know, ended up losing massively.
Yeah. I mean, it was Colorado State. They were in a 12 seed.
North Carolina, Wilmington.
UNC, Wilmington almost beat Tech?
Yeah, Texas Tech.
Who looked really stinking good in their last game.
That was a game for
us. 82-72 was the final of that one.
Yeah.
Wofford, no, that was a 15-point.
Are you just
loss.
Talking like?
I'm just saying, like, what was the
12 seeds making it as a Cinderella for me?
Is that a Cinderella for
to
you?
To a Sweet 16,
yeah. Okay.
This is the first time since 07 we haven't had an 11 seed or higher. The only double digit seed you have is Arkansas.
Yeah, Robert Morrison. The first time, I remember we were watching that game at the casino
on Bama.
Friday morning. Yeah, that was a back and forth game. Bama was on the ropes a little bit, so
that
you almost
been
had
a great
that one.
Yeah.
12 seed. I guess it depends on your definition. 12 seed.
What
though,
is
I
it for
point.
You?
I don't know why in my head I go higher than a 12 seed. I think it depends on who your 12 seed is.
I think it's pretty rare to have a 13 or higher to go to the Sweet 16.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I like Arkansas being a 10 seed.
That's a deceiving 10.
That's a deceiving 10 one, and it's John Calipari. It's like I don't view that the same as like a 100% agree. You know, I think the
but
team
this
matters.
Is where if the SEC is going to get 14 in and the Big Ten's going to get 10 in every year,
play each other in the first.
You're going to have those 10, 11, 12 seeds, the last at large teams where maybe you could have gotten a second school in from a Missouri Valley or, you know, one of those other better playing the Atlantic 10, something like that. I think the opportunities to have true Cinderellas, that goes away if you're going to have 10, 11, 12, 13 teams from the power conferences get in on a regular basis.
Tend to agree with you there. We got a poll question up. Do you miss the Cinderella this year? Do you wish there were more left in the tournament? You can either say yes, more upsets. I want more upsets, or no, I like the best team still being around in the Sweet 16. We'll get to the responses on that coming up in the final hour of the show. Let's talk about a lightning rod for the sport and how he continued his trend yesterday. That is next on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure?
Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com.
Guys, our lighting different?
On the, I don't know, on the YouTube?
You got a soft yellow glow. I got like kind of a bright...
I got a summery hue over
LED,
here.
LED, kind of bluish hue. It looks really weird on the YouTubes.
It does. It's a little strange. The camera filters get knocked off from time to time. Not quite sure what's going on there, but we're here. We're live, nonetheless. We'll talk a little bit, a little Blazers in the final hour of the show. Lost a half game in the fight for the 10 seed in the West.
The Mavericks won a game.
The Mavericks won a game on Friday, which made it very important if you are a believer in Portland making the 10 seed that they had to win on Friday, and they did. Dallas is back in action, so we'll talk some NBA coming up in the final hour of the show. There is somebody who has become one of the biggest lightning rods in the entire sport. And from moments of winning national championships or walking off the floor after a win and pointing at his finger saying, I got two of these, Dan Hurley is a very controversial figure in college basketball.
Yes, he is.
He elicits, no matter how you feel about UConn, no matter how you feel about the sport, he elicits an opinion immediately. When you see and hear Dan Hurley, you got a thought on it.
He's mostly hated, I would guess.
He is not a vanilla personality. So they lose yesterday, first game of the day, they lose to Florida. UConn's bid for three straight national championships comes up just short. Final score is a hair misleading. They hit a late shot there, but a good game nonetheless.
By the way, that three at the buzzer by McNeely.
Hit the over.
It hit the over.
He hit two of them, I think, in the final like 40 seconds of the game. Everybody's like, thank God for this guy. He hit the over. Dan Hurley, so the next game up was Baylor-Duke. Mm-hmm. So Baylor-Duke, the Baylor's getting ready to go through the tunnel onto the floor.
They're waiting for UConn to go
Everybody's
out.
Everybody's leaving. Yeah. Next team's coming out, getting ready to warm up. That's the way the tournament works. Dan Hurley walking through the tunnel sees the Baylor team as they're getting ready to head onto the floor. And this was picked up by a hot microphone. If you don't catch the audio there, he's telling the Baylor team, I hope they don't bleep you like they bleeped us. I hope they don't do that to you, Baylor. Good old Dan Hurley at it again.
He is so good for the sport because you need a new villain.
You have to have a villain.
And there's guys in that sport, like Patino for some is a villain, I guess, because he's a vampire. Calipari's got the car salesman vibe, so yeah. For some he's a villain. This guy's a different kind of... He's a Bobby Knight villain.
Yes, he is.
We need the angry, loud villain.
He is a psychotic competitor.
He is, and I think that's great. I also, every time out, I'm just, how is he not getting tossed?
He's the Draymond Green of college basketball
coaches. He really is. Like, any other coach does this, they're getting tossed and ejected, but he's allowed this grace to just scream at people and say whatever he wants. I might not like it, but I will surely tell you, I respect him as a coach. He clearly knows what he's doing, obviously. But I also think the sport needs this. Mm-hmm. It's a relevance thing for that sport to have a guy that when he loses, basically thinks he's getting screwed. Even though I'd argue, I felt like both whistles were going both ways. And when he wins, he'll tell you, I'm great, you're not. Here's my two rings. You need this guy in this sport. And so you may not like it. It may be not flattering to him, but it's really good for that sport to have this.
As somebody who is a terrible loser in their own right and cannot stand losing at anything that I do, I appreciate that. I love Dan Hurley, dude. I love everything about this guy. He is so good for college basketball. He's such a lightning rod. I love that he runs his mouth to opposing fan bases and then cries in the postgame interview about how much he loved this team. I love shouting this to another team. It's all great, man. It's incredible content. He's a diehard competitor. And for anybody who wants to, like, complain about this, oh, don't be a crybaby after the game, after your team lost. Like, him doing that in the tunnel is what makes Dan Hurley Dan Hurley. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, he is such a psych. He cannot handle losing. I don't think his brain can fathom it.
And so he's got to lash out. He's got to find some sort of way to get his anger out because he just can't control his emotions. That's what makes him an elite coach. This is what makes him top of the top. And I know UConn didn't have the year that they've had the last 2 years. He set a pretty high standard for himself winning back-to-back national championships.
Yeah, but they damn near did it.
I'm so glad this guy didn't take the Laker job. I'm so glad he's sticking around in college basketball.
That's worked out for both.
It has worked out for both.
Imagine him with LeBron.
The sport needs this. They desperately need this, man.
LeBron would pick him up eventually. Just throw him into the fourth row.
Just break him in half.
There's a really good piece done by him, too, of how he got to where he got.
Throw in my huddle!
Basically, like, just nowhere near the player his brother was.
No.
But watching his brother succeed, paired with his struggles in college as a player, paired with his dad being this
it's fueled him.
Legendary red-ass high school coach, it is kind of what molded him into this. Yeah. All of those failures, all of those less-thans have made him this. And I think when you see that psychotic side of him, you can surely hate it, and I totally get, but you also look at it and go, man, it's all that pent up disappointment,
yeah,
let down, fuel rage. I will not be less than or second in my own house anymore. Yes. And he carries it with him every single game.
There's some deep psychological issues there, if you will, I love it nonetheless.
He clearly blacks out and becomes a different person.
He is so good for college hoops, and he was on display again yesterday. That he went from there to then doing his interview in the tunnel like a minute later crying.
Yeah, emotional.
Whoever was doing the interview with him. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Crunch Time. Brought to you, as always, by our good friends at Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. Did you guys know love is in the air? We have to talk about that in the final hour of the show.
Kevin Love?
No, just love. It is in the air. Mm. Life is better with you by my side.
Oh.
That is coming up in the final hour of the show, because how do we not talk about it? We'll get to the NBA. Blazers win on Friday, lose yesterday. A big standing watch party going on tonight as both Dallas and Phoenix are in action. A couple of NFL news and notes bits as well. Loaded final hour on a Monday. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.